In the name of one God, Holy Trinity. Amen. So we've got some high drama in these readings this morning. We're parachuting into Luke, into the 8th chapter, and Jesus is engaging this man whose life is fraught with challenge. He meets Jesus as Jesus and his disciples are visiting this neighboring place from where they typically live. The man is naked. He lives in a graveyard. And the story says he is possessed by demons. When he sees Jesus, when the man sees Jesus, he falls down to the ground at Jesus' feet and he yells at him, which is weird, right? It's unusual. And he is begging Jesus not to torment him. And he addresses Jesus as the Son of the Most High. So there are a couple of details that are important here for us, and I want to point them out before we get too far into the story, looking at how it affects us here today, Jackson, 2019. The first thing that I would say is that the man is naked. It's a form of public disgrace. We're supposed to see that. He lives in a graveyard, which is the dirtiest place that someone can live in this day and age. Maybe a pigsty is dirtier, but maybe not. And he's crazy. He's really crazy. This man is completely disconnected from any other living human being. And he has been disconnected for some time now. Now this, of course, in Luke's writing is an exaggerated story. Likely there wasn't a man with all of these afflictions, but Luke is telling this story for us so that we have a sense of a portrait of a man who has absolutely nothing going for him. You get that, right? This man has nothing going for him. Absolutely nothing. And then there's this other detail that we're supposed to hear, but we probably miss. Jesus is not really having a conversation with this man per se, but rather with the demons that are possessing the man. And further, we're meant to see that the demons know exactly who Jesus is before he ever utters one word, and they're afraid of him. So in Luke's gospel, while many people, including the disciples, have a hard time discerning just who Jesus is, the demons need no time at all. They know exactly who he is. The spirit world, even the evil spirit world, know Jesus before he ever opens his mouth. Interesting, right? A little trivial, but interesting. And then this episode of high drama ensues. Jesus asks the man his name. And the man responds that it is Legion, indicating how many demons he has inside. And then some humor for everyone except the pig farmers, right? The demons ask Jesus not to send them into the abyss, whatever that means. We're not really clear. And so he casts these demons into a herd of pigs. At that moment, the pigs stampede over a cliff and drown themselves in the Sea of Galilee. High drama. High drama. Now, in the interest of transparency, I'm not really drawn to the high drama of this story. I'm not drawn to a man who cannot be bound by chains, who lives naked in a cemetery, who struggles with his own sanity. I'm drawn to the lower drama parts of the story. And as I began to read this story over again this week, and this is one of my favorites, but as I began to read it over again this week, I began asking myself the questions, what is Jesus trying to do here? What's he up to? What's his intention? What does this have to do with us? You know, Jackson, Wyoming, 2019, sort of summer. And the responses to this question are layered, right? The first level responses are pretty obvious. The man is possessed by demons. Jesus is trying to get him dispossessed of demons. And then there's that next level. Well, he's trying to heal this man. This man is sick. He's ill. He's unclean. And Jesus is trying to make him well. He's trying to turn a sick man into a well man, which is amazing. I'm grateful he does this kind of work. It's lovely and inspiring, and maybe we can try it too. And then there's that next level. What's he trying to do here? What's he up to? What's his intention? He's not only trying to make this man dispossessed of demons. He's not only trying to make this man dispossessed and healed. He's trying to make this man dispossessed and healed and restored. The real problem is what has happened to this man since he was possessed by demons, not the fact that he is possessed. This man is completely isolated. He is totally disconnected from other people, from humanity. He is cut off from loving relationship. He is utterly alone. He is ironically utterly alone. Can you hear the irony in the story? His name is Legion. His name is Legion. And he's utterly alone. Anybody ever felt alone in a crowd? Ever felt alone in a room full of family? Ever felt alone at a party with friends? So my favorite part of this whole story comes in the very last verse. It's low, low drama. The man wants to stay with Jesus, right? That's no big surprise. He must be traumatized, quite frankly, and he wants to stay, but Jesus doesn't let him stay. He says to the man, "Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you." Jesus says, "Go, be restored to your people." That's the point of all of this. Restoration. The point's not one more person following Jesus around. The point was, you who are disconnected are connected again. You once were lost to your people, and now you are found to them. You are not alone. Return to your home and declare how much God has done for you. Feels very Joseph Campbell, right? Maybe this is one of the stories that Campbell used for the beats of his hero's adventure. Departure, fulfillment, return, or restoration. And so I feel like we're just set up for the same work, the same mission, restoration. I see it. I feel like a good portion of our work here as a church is devoted to this, to restoration of people, that this is a part of our love work, restoring people who are disconnected or isolated or alone, not conceptually, but practically, reaching toward them rather than being repelled by them, refusing to make an enemy, refusing to be scandalized by their circumstance or their peculiarity. And this is hard, and it feels risky, and it is. And it is also so, so loving. Maybe you are already in that work, working to reconnect. Maybe you're the one feeling isolated or disconnected or alone. Maybe you've been reconnected already by a loved one or a stranger, or maybe I hope, I pray, by this community, our church. No matter the circumstance, each of us knows someone disconnected, whether it is we who are disconnected, or it is some other person or some other group of people. So here's what I'm thinking. You take one of these permission slips. If you don't have one, there are more in the back of the church. And here's what I'm saying to myself on my permission slip this week. It won't all fit on the permission slip, but most of it will. Here's what I'm saying to myself. I'm saying, Jimmy, this week I'm giving you permission and I am encouraging you to be on the lookout for someone disconnected, someone who needs to be restored. And just to be clear, Jimmy, they don't have to be naked, crazy, and living up on Snow King. They just have to be disconnected. Jimmy, when you spot them, I want you to do something about it. To do something about it. We can do this. Maybe a coffee or a walk or a dinner or a text or a smile across the room. It's as simple and as complicated as that, Jimmy. Jimmy, I know you can do it. So please do. Ah, if we could do this. The News and Guide would have a hard time writing a story about this one. But we don't do it for the press. We do it for love. For love's sake. Church, I feel like we can do this. I feel like we can. I'm expecting us to try at least. We're that strong. We are. We can try this, and we can try this and fail. But maybe we wouldn't fail. Maybe we wouldn't fail. I really feel the Spirit, our Pentecostal partner, that Pentecostal side of our church, that we were built to spread it side of our church. I really feel the Spirit urging us on in this love work. And I wonder what stories you'll have to share next week. Amen.